as well as energy efficiency. But Ramanam, please take the floor and make your question.
Thank you. Good afternoon, all of you. I heard the different sessions in the morning and afternoon. I said, is there anything left to say? Most of the things have been covered. And the topic I was asked to talk about is not that exciting like you saw, no, the other topics. So I was wondering how to cover it. I decided not to make it too technical. I just thought about just giving the outline. And some of you, those are interested, will have a session tomorrow, the whole day. So the topic is building energy auditing and management. Now, we've already seen... I don't have to go into the details of why energy is important for buildings. We've got a lot of statistics. Milly in the morning presented lots of statistics for India. And we've seen how the population is growing and there are social cultural changes. We have smaller families, we need more apartments, and of course we are looking for more comfort. So if you start looking at, let's say, the commercial buildings sector particularly, where does the load come from? You have lighting, followed by heating, ventilation, air conditioning. Then you have other electrical appliances where it's growing with the IT. You have other loads. And finally, you land up having about 250 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. And that can vary from place to place. So I've just tried to give you this cone, because I'm going to refer to this cone again and again to give you an idea how much is the consumption, which is represented by this cone. And we know where is it coming from lighting, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, etc. I mean, you can see most of the buildings today, commercial buildings or buildings in the cities, daytime we use lighting. So that shows how the designs are. Now, I've just tried to look at the Energy Star buildings, which have been defined by the Bureau of Energy Efficiency of the Government of India. They talk about 5-star buildings, starting from 1-star to 5-star buildings, and they've defined what should be the consumption of these buildings. So you can have buildings which are consuming about 200 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. You can also have buildings which are consuming 175 kilowatt hour per meter square per year, with the same functions, same activities, and the buildings which are in between are rated as 1-star. And if you go further, there are buildings which consume 150 kilowatt hour per meter square per year, and they are rated as 2-star. You go further, your buildings which are consuming 125 kilowatt hour per meter square per year, they get a rating of 3-star, between 125 and 150, and so on and so forth. Then you get 4-star, and finally the buildings which consume less than 100 kilowatt hour are given 5-star. What does it say? It's possible for us to have the same comfort, same services, using different amounts of energy, starting with less than 100 kilowatt hour per meter square per year to 200 kilowatt hour or more. If you go to hotels and resorts in India, they go up to 500, 600, 700 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. So these are the ranges that we are talking about. And, you know, once you, and where does this load come from? We'll see. I'll just skip the next one, just to give you an idea how, looking at the same cone, you can have a very big cone or you can go down to a very small cone, less than 100 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. The challenge is, how do we achieve this? And when you talk about energy auditing, we're looking at how the building is performing, what can we do about it. Milly talked to you about the different aspects, and I'm just again repeating it. I showed you the cone earlier. This is the cone showing 250 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. How do you reduce the cone? Where do you start from? Tuan started off by talking about lifestyle, followed by Howard. We also mentioned about lifestyle. Defining between our need and want. We need to start from there. What is our need? And very often we confuse between need and want, and that's why it becomes not 250, it's 350 or 450 or 550 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. Particularly for hotels and resorts, they think this is the type of comfort people should have. That's how they define it, and the consumption much higher. So the first step that you can see, how do you reduce this cone? You look at the sustainable designing aspects. Again, this was mentioned by Milly, quite a lot of detail. I won't go into it. You can see that right from the beginning,
by looking at the architectural aspects, it's possible for you to reduce the cone to a great extent. And this does not necessarily require more investment. It requires more time, more efforts, more coordination amongst the different players. She mentioned about how we are compartmentalized between the architect, between the engineer and the contractors. They don't talk to each other right from the beginning. And as a result, we come up with buildings which are poorly designed, aesthetically very nice, but poorly designed. And then we need to go for more sophisticated things. Now, mind you, by the time you've finished your sustainable design, you've already reduced, let's say, from 200 kilowatt hour per meter square, we are down to, let's say, 150 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. What does it mean? Whatever active system they're going to put in there is going to be much smaller. You'll have a smaller air conditioning system. You'll have a smaller lighting system. So you may have put a little bit more money on the designing part by paying the architect. And you know, architects are paid on the basis of how big the project is. So architects will inflate the cost, not try to see how to reduce the cost. If we had changed a little bit, saying that architects will be paid on the basis of how much they can reduce the consumption of the building, we'll have a new set of architects coming up. It doesn't happen because architects have told, make your project and you'll get a percentage out of that. So obviously, architects have all the interest to go for expensive products to increase the cost of the project so that they get a higher share of it. If you reverse the trend, then you'll find architect is paid more to reduce the consumption, and then you go for the next step, where you look at appliances, you have lighting systems, and we have a series of lighting systems, and I'll come back to it later on through examples. Heating and cooling equipment and other appliances, whether it's refrigerator, washing machine, computers, depending on whether it's household appliances and office appliances, then you have come down to less than 100 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. And that's where you have taken care of your demand side and you've achieved 5-star. Then you can start thinking about supply side, what you can do. The next step can be to look at the supply side, what type of renewable energy systems you can bring in by which you can reduce your demand further. And that's how we can achieve a building with 50 kilowatt hour per meter square per year. And I'm talking about climates which are much more harsh. I'm not talking about warm, cold climates where you can insulate and take care of it. In climates like here, it's much more difficult for you to achieve that type of comfort just by insulation or things like that. Insulation doesn't work. You have to find other ways to do it. So there you are. You have achieved a low energy house. We're talking about energy positive. If you have more means, you can go further. But this can be achieved within your means. If you start in the right direction, you can see as the cone reduces, your investments also come down. Unfortunately, very often people start looking at, what can I do? I can go for renewable energy in a building. So people ask you, can I put solar in my house? But we haven't looked at how to reduce in the first place designing aspects, second one, energy efficient appliances. So obviously when you're talking about energy auditing and management, we have already got a system and you're going to audit that to see how to improve it. So our scope for taking care of activities in the designing aspects are very limited. There are a few things you can do, but they're always more expensive because you have invested once and you're going to invest it again. And the last one is, again, there are a lot of potential for fossil fuels. You look at the power plant efficiency, they're hardly about 35% or so. And they're always located very far away from where we need the power. So you have transmission distribution losses. You don't have the scope for using the waste heat for various applications. There have been very good examples of, you know, city centers where they're putting up power plants where you can recover the heat, you can do cooling. For example, Bangkok International Airport. The whole airport runs with gas turbine power plant, recovers the heat, produces steam, takes care of all the heating requirement of the Thai kitchen, and the steam is used for all the cooling of the airport. And the cooling of the airport is done not by air systems, it's shared by floor cooling and very small amount for air systems. And there again, you can reduce your energy consumption quite a lot. Now, if you're focusing on the particular aspect of energy efficiency, again, it was talked about a lot, we need to first understand how efficient is our energy conversion chain. There's a whole story behind it. You start with coal and oil. When you start getting it from the nature, you need to convert it, whether it's in a refinery or in a power plant. You get secondary energy, and you know, as I mentioned, in the power plant, your efficiency is hardly 35% or so. Similarly, in refinery, you have efficiencies. You get the secondary form of energy that goes further
in the transmission distribution network, we have networks which where the losses are very little, but when we come to a country like India, losses can be as high as 20% or more. So there again, you lose a part of it. Then you go further, looking at the appliances that we use at home, lamps, motors, and compressors. Further, you have losses. By the time you get the energy services, you can see how much less is there. And I'll give some numbers to sensitize you about the types of losses that we have. And that helps us to provide us the type of energy services that we're looking for, whether it's human comfort or cooking of food or IT applications, etc. So when you look at the whole chain, the types of losses that are incurred in different steps, we need to look at it in a more holistic manner. Okay? An integrated approach, we need to start from demand management and we end with the right choice of energy supply. We have various supplies possible. We have to look at the type of energy which will have least impact on the environment. So the cone I showed you, the bottom part was about demand management. The top part, I talked about the supply management. I'll just take one specific case which I like to take up in most cases to explain. This is our lighting system today. We still use a lot of incandescent lamps. The type of lighting service we require is about, let's say, 1500 lumens. To provide 1500 lumens, we use a 100 watt lamp. Out of that, 95 watt goes as heat. Only 5 watt is obtained as light. So you get 100 watts. I've taken very conservative numbers of 10%. So you have 10 watt losses in the distribution network. That comes to 110. In the power plant, you lose 225. So you supply the energy in the coal, 225 plus 110, that's 335 watt. The energy which is used to provide the service is hardly 5 watt. So you can calculate what type of efficiency we have in the whole chain. Less than 5% of the energy that is supplied in coal is actually delivered as energy service. We need to understand this very well. And I can give you different examples due to lack of time. I will not go into all types of chains. But then I just want to show how we can move on. By small changes, we can make big differences. And that's where we talked about policy aspects earlier. So you can see, if you take this as the base case, only a very small fraction of the fuel which is converted in into useful energy in lighting. Taking the base case, we look at a small change, one small change, which is changing from incandescent lamp on top to a compact fluorescent lamp. We don't compromise on energy service. We still have 1,500 lumens. That is what is required for that particular task. But you see the changes that are taking place. As you go upstream, just by making one change, we reduce our heat losses. Okay, incandescent lamps are good for heating, not for lighting. You can see what is the impact of that. By the time you come back to the coal, you see how much amount of energy which is required. And obviously, as you narrow down that band, the less is the investment that you require in power plants. Now, the other day I read in Tamil Nadu, electricity company was talking about giving away free lamps to people. Okay. I mean, it's a very popular way of distributing lamps. Bureau of Energy Efficiency, Government of India, has been doing this through the clean development mechanism. You sell the lamps at the same price as the compact fluorescent lamp is sold at the same price as incandescent lamp, 15 rupees. A good compact fluorescent lamp may cost you maybe 10 times more. Now imagine if you are given a lamp at 15 rupees, is there anybody who would say no? You get it back through the clean development mechanism. The lamp works for 2 years, 3 years. When you have to replace the lamp, who pays for it? Are you going to go back to the utility and ask again? But if you had the right type of policy, you know, that's where, you know, earlier there was a question about utility demand side management. The power company could put the money in providing with the lamp and recovering the money in the electricity bill. If the lamp cost is 100 rupees, if they charge you every month 10 rupees and get it back in 10 months' time, you will not even see the amount of money, because when you are paying 10 rupees back, you will be actually saving more than 15 rupees in your electricity bill. So from the day one, we talked about shared saving. We talked about energy performance contracting. That's the type of deal we are talking about. You bring the technology, you get back the money slowly, and actually both parties benefit right from the beginning. Here it's not just contracting. You actually share the savings right from the beginning, because you'll be saving more than 15 rupees. You are keeping back 5 rupees and giving back to the grid. And which company today, which power company can boast of getting back the investment within 10 months or 1 year time? And yet we don't look at these type of aspects. This is for lighting, you could go for other type of things. Firstly, my objective was not to go into the policy aspects, but I said some things may not happen because you can even do auditing, people may not go because there's a difference between who is going to pay for what. When you're paying for compact fluorescent lamp, you're not going to invest on the power plant. But in the case of India, sometimes you have to invest on both sides because of the present situation. You have to go for a diesel power plant. So you need to think about how you invest in a manner that you get the best benefit out of it. This is where you achieve a factor 5 effect. There's a book called Factor 5. Now, Herbert mentioned about this on one of the slides. So there are lots of examples of how you can achieve Factor 5 without sacrificing your comfort and services. So this is how you can achieve Factor 5 with very little effort, just by changing one lamp. We have not improved our distribution network. We have not changed the power plant. The same power plant is able to provide service to 5 different lamps. Population growth may be there, but you can still manage to give to more people without really investing too much in the power plant. I'm not saying that we don't need to have power plants, but we need to see how to divide it on both sides so that we look at both supply and demand side. Go a step further. We have a technology now where we go from compact fluorescent lamp to light emitting diode. You can achieve another factor 2. There we are with factor 10. The same services, you can see how it's narrowing down on the supply side. Okay. Now, once we have done this, we've achieved a factor 10. Now we start looking back the base case and we jump on to renewable energy. Then it becomes interesting. You've divided your demand by 10 times. You won't have a transmission distribution losses because you're producing where you're going to consume. And you can easily afford to go for renewable energies. And for this to happen, we need to have a lot of policy changes because still the regulation that we talked about, whether it is CERC, Energy Regulatory Commission, or it is the Bureau of Energy Efficiency, they're all working independently. There is no efforts to put them together. And I mentioned earlier about how do we incentivize people to go for both sides. If you go for only for solar, people will look at solar, but they will not have divided their consumption by 10 times. How do you bring in a tariff where you link it with how much you are reducing? Okay? I mentioned about it as a form of presumption. Every consumer can start becoming a producer. But you do it in a manner that the tariff is linked with what I call presumption index. If you are able to produce 50% of your consumption, you get a tariff. If you're going to produce 80% of your consumption, you get a higher tariff. And then the user is incentivized, and we talk about democratic way of doing things. How do you make everybody participate in the whole exercise? Now you have a big player who comes in and invests in solar, but the others don't see any changes. We have, Herbert mentioned about solar systems. In Rajasthan, we have huge projects. We have CSP project coming up. Reliance is putting up a 100 megawatt CSP plant, and there are 5 others who are putting up similar type of plants. It's happening. But then we have other issues linked with that. It's put in a place where there's no water. And you're taking away water for the villages where government is trying to provide in the canal. So there is a fight between water and energy, and people in that area are not going to develop because they don't have access to any market. They cannot develop themselves. So you're putting up a plant somewhere, you still have this 25% transmission distribution losses, and it's meant for people in the cities. So how democratic it is. So we have to look at other ways to have right type of policy by which you can encourage more participation in people. I liked very much your example of Adelaide. How within a very short time period, was it Adelaide?
Yeah.
In a very short time period, every 1 in 5 house has come up with solar systems. And they're not mega systems. We are talking about promoting 1 megawatt, 5 megawatt, or more bigger size projects. There we're talking about on average, if it's 250 megawatt, we're talking about on an average about 2 kilowatt or so. Most houses can afford it. If they cannot afford, their neighbor can afford it. You can rent your space. Gujarat government is already doing it. Gujarat government has lent all the roof space for investment for solar. And they get, actually, government departments earn money out of renting the space. So there are many ways by which you can approach it in a different manner. So the point I wanted to make is, when we do audit, we start looking at the whole system. And we don't just look at either solar or
a particular way. We have an integrated approach looking at the problem so that we look at both demand and supply side and you'll find more interesting results. So from the factor four efficiency we looked at, the steps that yield the greatest impact on the whole system should be performed first. And there we saw lighting one device which could divide your supply five times just by one device. And you can see there is what we say compounded effect. You start from the end point and you can see the type of benefits you can get. On the lighting point of view, you would reduce from 100 watts to 20 watts. On the supply point of view, you will reduce from 335 watts to five times less. Downstream investments reduce the demand, and we have seen how they can influence the upstream supply side investments. The same power plant, either you use the same power plant to supply to more number of people or you reduce your investment greatly. Compact fluorescent lamp, take an example of compact fluorescent lamp. Each compact fluorescent lamp saving about 45 watts. Let's take 60 watts being replaced by 15 watts. That's 45 watts saving. Herbert again mentioned about the megawatt, 45 megawatt. You put 22 lamps, you get 1 kilowatt saving. 22 lamps will cost you 2,200 rupees. You'll reduce your demand by 1 kilowatt. Whereas the power company is spending 50,000 rupees a kilowatt. So there you can see there's a huge factor. By factor 4 reduction, you're going to reduce our investments almost by 20 times. Similar to lighting, you can have examples of factor 4 in all systems. Again, I don't have the time to show you. I could show you the same. And those who are joining tomorrow, I'll actually go through all the examples of air conditioning and other areas in the same manner. Now, I show it this way. Where do you have a switch? We have energy efficiency and renewable energy. Where do you actually have a switch from energy efficiency to renewable energy? We heard about the low-hanging fruit. Energy efficiency is the so-called low-hanging fruit. But as we go on, you can go on improving the efficiency. I talked about changing from from incandescent lamp to compact fluorescent lamp, compact fluorescent lamp to LED. From LED, we are talking about organic LED and other types of lighting systems. So we can go on improving, and the cost keeps on rising. So we can see the first savings can be achieved with very little investment. You want to go further, it becomes much harder. It's like, you know, as you go on churning milk, you get less and less amount of butter. So as you have to work much harder to go further. If you want to go further, beyond a certain point, you find there's no point in going for energy efficiency because it becomes more expensive. And there is the right time to switch over to renewable energy. So when you start doing energy audit, you start understanding this better. You have a more integrated approach to the whole problem. You don't just jump on to say that you put this or that. You start looking at the whole picture and start from endpoint. Unfortunately, what happens, auditor comes in and we just like, auditors like are like five blind men. You have one auditor looks at the boiler, comes and says, this is the type of change you can do. Another auditor goes into steam system, talks about what are the improvements you can do. A third auditor goes into the use pattern and gives you a solution. We don't have the five auditors coming together, the five blind men coming together to define an elephant. So energy auditing is an exercise where you need to bring in all the expertise together. Look at the whole system. So that comes to our present situation because we are talking specifically about India. Why do you need to go for energy audit? There can be various reasons. It's not just about energy cost saving. This is a common example. You can be fed up with power cuts. There can be increase in power bill. There can be frequent breakdowns. Or you can find that erratic power supply or energy supply. All this can lead us to question in what way can we improve our reliability. It's not necessarily only about reducing the cost. If you are in any of this situation, then you can start thinking about, you know, how to carry out energy audit or diagnosis. Okay. So energy audit is the first step to look at how to reduce the cost. Looking at all aspects, how do you improve the reliability? How do you reduce your dependence on fossil fuel? You can have all these objectives in energy costs. Okay. And of course, you'll find there are many ways to achieve the same goal. The question is, how do you find the right way? Okay. And an energy auditor who has a holistic approach, who has an integrated approach to looking at the problem, will find it in a way, okay, you'll provide the right focus and the right direction so that you know the right roadmap to achieve your goal. Okay, so you can find many auditors giving different types of solutions. We need to have auditors who have a mindset which looks at the whole system and not just component by component. Okay. Very often you have, you know, electrical system, you send an electrical engineer. You have a thermal system, you send a thermal engineer. You have a mechanical system, you say a mechanical engineer. But we don't look at the whole system at one go.
I will not go into too much. I said I will not go into the details, but I just want to show you the steps. Starting with first preliminary energy analysis, we talked about how do you come up with index, how do you compare with others, what is your present situation. Earlier I mentioned if your building consumes between 175 kilowatt hour per meter square per year and 200 kilowatt hour, you get a 1-star rating. So by just keeping track of your energy consumption or electricity consumption in this case, divided by the air conditioned area, you will already know where you are. Then you know where is the starting point, what scope you have, what potential you have to reduce it, because others have already done it. The question is how far you can do it once the building is already there. Then you go through more details by walking through, looking at the systems. Look at where there is a potential for improvement. And again, it's just like a good doctor. Over the years, it's not that you just have to have lots of tools to measure people. You just look at people, ask them a few questions, and you already have a feeling of where there are potential for improvement. Similarly here, just by walking through with a good knowledge, you can already find out where are the potential for improvements. Of course, you don't quantify them. Next comes the next step about energy survey and analysis, where you go into further breakdown of, you know, lighting system, air conditioning system, other appliances. You start analyzing them more in details. You keep record of them. You find out what time, who is using what, where are the peak demands coming. Okay? And then you start looking at what are the improvement measures, capital investment, what type of savings that you can have, what type of payback periods, etc. You want to go further. If the client is still interested, then you go further to do a more detailed analysis. And that's where you do cost-benefit analysis. You refine it further. You get data over a longer period of time. And there are tools nowadays, just like for designing, you have tools for retrofitting, where you can do hourly simulation. In some cases, you cannot measure it easily. You can do hourly simulation by which you can say what would be the benefits if you made certain changes. I will skip over all the technical parts, level 1, 2, 3, because I think there's not enough time. Those who are interested can join tomorrow. I'll talk more about it. I just wanted to talk about the life cycle cost analysis. Okay. I call it the Titanic effect. Okay. We very often look at an iceberg and we make our judgment, our procurement cost, including the government's procurement cost, are all based on the lowest cost. We don't look at what is the associated life cycle cost. We look at what is our, what I call, the seen versus the unseen cost. Okay? So, as you know, Titanic sank because you only judge, the captain judged by looking at the iceberg and didn't judge what was underneath. So, all our cases, when you make investment today, many of the cases, we make investment looking at what we can see, but we have forgotten what is underneath. Many of the cases, the costs are huge if you look at the life cycle. I've again taken a simple example just to show with lighting. I could do much more. I could do it for renewable energy systems. I've taken the case of lamps. Investment, you can buy incandescent lamp for 15 rupees. I'm talking about a very good quality lamp with guarantee, giving a warranty of 2 years, let's say, it cost you 180 rupees. I've taken purposely a higher figure. I know you can get it cheaper than that. Even if you take that figure, if you take the electricity price of 4 rupees per kilowatt hour in both cases, taking into account the life of both the systems, both life cycle costs for 5,000 hours, you can see the incandescent lamp costs you 2,075 rupees, whereas the efficient compact fluorescent lamp will cost 580 rupees. What is more interesting to see is what is the cost of saving electricity? You're purchasing electricity as 4 rupees per kilowatt hour. You'll be saving electricity at 45 paisa per kilowatt hour. That's again a factor 10 of savings if you look at the life cycle analysis. Obviously, I have not looked into the time value of money. Even if I had taken that time value of money, 45 paisa may become 90 or 1 rupee. Still, it is 1/4 of the cost of purchasing electricity. And that's why I said you could pay back the amount within 10 months' time. If the utility-driven DSM programs were there, we could pay back within 10 months' time. It was a refrigerator, you could do it in 3 years' time. If you had an air conditioner, you could do it on 5 years' time, and yet everybody is going to benefit, the end user, the utility, as well as the government. The
This slide shows you where the audit is all about. Energy audit is not the goal by itself. It is just the starting point. So that's why we link energy audit with energy management. Energy management is a cyclic process, because just like all of us trying to improve all the time, we can find new ways by which we can improve our performance. You start with something, you start believing that it's possible, and you go through the cyclic process by first analyzing the situation. So energy audit allows you to know where you are, what is your present status, the baseline, and then start looking at what can type of set targets you can set. I mentioned about the different star rating. You could target different star rating to start with. Not very ambitious, start step by step so that you gain experience. Then you carry out the implementation. We need to monitor and report. Monitoring is very important. If you do something and we don't monitor it on a regular basis, there is no way we can find it. One very nicely pointed out, every morning he gets up and sees what has been the consumption. I call it the weight watcher. If you want to reduce weight, don't wait for the end of the month to wait, check your weight. Buy a weighing machine, put it in your bathroom. Every time you take a shower, go down there and see whether you've gained or not. I'm sure you'll change your diet for that day. And last thing I talked about, why we need to do it in a cyclic manner, because, you know, I've been to places where people said, oh, we have been audited, you know, 5 years back somebody had audited and they said there was no potential. Things change with time. If you take the case of life cycle analysis, this is where I put, let's say, about 4 rupees or 4.5 rupees, which is US cents, 9 cents per kilowatt hour. Today, if you do analysis, just like the one I showed you for light, you could do analysis for all these different types of appliances. These are similar type of studies have been done. They show you there are many cases where going for these options are cheaper than buying electricity. There are some cases it is higher, and you can see many of them fall in that area of renewable energy. We have not plucked the low-hanging fruit. Very often we jump on to go for very high-cost solutions, including the government. You can see the government is putting lots of money on renewable energy, not enough on demand-side management. Now, the point I wanted to show is what happens with time. We have seen very recently regulatory commissions have changed the tariff, which was artificially kept low. This is what you'll find with time. As you go with time, you can see how some of the solutions which were expensive were not viable, they will start becoming viable. And that's the case of solar photovoltaic today. We have seen how the price has come down. As the technology develops, on the other side you'll see this moves on the left. So on one side, the energy price will keep on rising as the fuel prices go up. On the other hand, you'll see all these technologies, solutions, as you get new technologies and the market transformation takes place, the prices will start falling. And we'll go into areas where some of the cases which were not viable today, if you do an audit after 2 years or after 3 years, you'll start seeing. So it's not a question of doing just energy audit once and for all. Just like we do financial audit for the companies every year, we need to think about how to keep an energy audit. And this need not be done by external experts. People can be trained inside to keep track of it. So to sum up, energy auditing management are effective in reducing the energy costs without affecting buildings' functional requirement. This is very important. We are not talking about sweating or staying in the dark. There are many solutions where we can actually achieve reduction of cost without compromising of the comfort and well-being. But there are some limitations, because as I said, the first chunk I talked about, which is linked with designing aspects, if that has been done, it's much more difficult for you to go in for it. And that's why you can see, even in Europe, it has been a tough task to renovate or rehabilitate old buildings. We are coming up with new regulations about how to make new buildings which are very energy efficient, but we haven't had that much success in retrofitting or rehabilitating the buildings, because that costs much more. You've made the investment once and you're going to do it again. And we have to look at how to gain compounded savings through whole systems analysis. Don't just jump into individual areas. We have to have a whole systems approach by which you can get compounded savings. And lastly, we need to look at life cycle cost analysis, and that's where we need to make changes. I don't know whether the government is going to do it. If you are from private sector, do think about going into systems where we look at life cycle cost analysis, not at the first cost itself. Thank you very much.